How am I doing a bit more specifically? Because I feel fine. Nothing's
That's
sore.
good.
Nothing's a big deal.
Not on fire.
Not on fire. Always good.
For a while, that's what I told myself. It's like, it's a good day, I'm not on fire. It's kind of my baseline. Maybe not the best standard, but does put things in perspective.
We can't hear what you're listening to.
I know.
So you're snickering in the background.
Sorry. Just turn it that way.
No, it's stereo.
Oh.
It's stereo. So you're in one side and I'm in the other side.
Sorry. I'm watching this silly, like, food reality TV show thing where, like, they had to make this dish for these kids, and the kids spit it out on live TV. So, it's just great.
It
Yeah, it was like the kids didn't like it.
Nice. Should have stuck with
Do
mac and cheese.
we have a particular
So what should
topic?
we talk about today? So many things.
So many things to talk about.
So many things,
I want to
yeah.
talk about The Witness. Have you played The Witness?
No, but I was thinking about getting it because it looks really cool.
It is really cool. It's a little bit
They haven't made
expensive.
a real good like Myst game that it captures that sort of awe and exploration in a while.
I mean, the price is a little expensive. I think it's worth it, but your mileage may vary, obviously. It's super, super pretty, and the puzzles are hard without being impossible. They've got that language building thing where you learn
Nice.
what it means, and there's a progressive understanding and deeper understanding of like how it all fits together. It's been really fun.
Cool. That sounds really fun. I don't know if I have a, like, I don't know if I put enough time in to merit buying it. I definitely am thinking about it, I guess. I feel like I've enjoyed those games most when playing with someone else. You know, like sharing the experience with someone. So I don't know.
I wondered why it was called The Witness, because it was like, what is it, like a some sort of crime thing? But it's literally about perception. Like there's a strong theme of perception running through it.
So you are the witness to
The
that.
player is the witness. And I haven't finished it yet, but there's puzzles, like, you know, the little square puzzles that you see when you look at the demo or whatever. So there's that, and they've got a circle on one side, and then they've got a line that goes from the circle, and you can try to get to an end that has a little rounded end. And that's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And so then you're walking around this island, and it's gorgeous. And so you're looking at everything, and looking around, it's like, huh, well, that thing is very circular, and there's a very strong, like, line coming out from it, and then it's got a little rounded end. It's like, And so at any time, whether you're facing a puzzle or not, you can left click and it goes into the little puzzle mode and like freezes where you're looking and puts a little border around the screen. And then you've got a cursor where you can click instead of just using mouse look. So it turns from mouse look to cursor mode. And so you look at it and you click on it and it lights up like in the world, and there's like these particle effects coming off the object, and it's like, what is this? And so then you move the cursor over and it moves along the line, and then it gets to the end, you click it, and the particles zoom off and go to one of these places. And it's like, what? There's like the world is a puzzle too. That's amazing. And so then not only are you looking at the puzzles, but when you're walking between the puzzles, everywhere you're looking, you're trying to see, is there a circle? Is there a circle somewhere? You know, like that I can click on, and then where's the line? And then there's a lot of stuff that is depth dependent and angle dependent and position dependent, where like half of the circle will be on one object and half the circle will be on another object. And you have to be standing in the right place to get them all to line up on your screen so you can click on it and draw the line where you need to go. So it's very, you know, and it makes you think about perception, where it's like, oh, well, you know, this line was there the whole time, but it's only there from a certain angle. You can only see it, you can only interact with it when you're in the right place. Even though that, like, the world doesn't change, stuff doesn't move around very much.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that actually, that sort of concept about perspective. And sometimes I feel like I can switch my perspective entirely. Does that make sense? Like I've refracted my perception and it's looking backwards. I don't know if that makes sense, but I drew a picture recently of kind of this idea of you know, beam of light going through a prism, splitting up into colored light, then going through a refracting lens that, you know, brought it back together, then goes through another prism and is back as a beam of light, right? Does that make sense?
There's an XKCD about it.
Right. So what if we take this idea and you take consciousness as unified consciousness, as the analogy for light, right? It goes through a, because a prism is an asymmetric phase change, right? Mm-hmm. The medium changes asymmetrically.
Right.
So we have an asymmetric phase change, which I think is the beginning of time, because time is asymmetric, basically, right? So you have consciousness pre-time, post-time consciousness, which then is diverse consciousness, split consciousness. And then the world acts like a mirror that reflects it back. Does that make sense?
Hmm.
At least that's the analogy in my head.
Okay.
Yeah, so then it goes back. The world acts as a mirror for consciousness, reflecting it back through the time phase asymmetry, and then it's back in unified form.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
So then the point would be to construct a lens so that it all comes back to one place instead of just splitting off on all directions.
But in a sense, the world is a lens.
Is it a lens or is it a mirror?
Well, it's a concave mirror.
Oh.
Such that it's acting like the lens in that it's...
Oh, okay. Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Hmm.
Because I was trying to, you know, think about, like, God's perspective, our perspective. How do you have unity in being between, right? How do you have diverse perspective at the same, you know, like, and
unified perspective? I think maybe the mirror lens thing is death.
Yeah, actually, it's the death. This is another thing I thought about. The world is death.
Hmm.
I think, in a sense. It, like, the material world is... in a sense, the death of consciousness. It's total stillness of awareness. It's where awareness comes to a halt, right? Which is death. So there's this sort of interchange between, like, death and life. And the mirror point is what you might call the physical world, but it's the manifestation. It's consciousness manifested in material world, which is the death of consciousness for a time, you know, in that moment, actually. It is dead.
Incarnation is death.
Yeah, it's incarnation. Incarnation is death. What we see as death, what we as incarnates see as death, is actually the passing through the time phase asymmetry, and I think that is actually really more life than death. But I don't know.
It's
kind of weird thought.
The death of death.
Well, I mean, death is like death. Okay, it depends on what side you're on, but right, for us, death is passing back into unity. Towards unity movement.
Mm. Well, and in your analogy, it would be also be reflecting back in time, going back through time.
No, it's pre-time.
Back toward pre-time.
Back towards time logically, not sequential. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Time doesn't exist past pre the barrier, so there is no time sequentially. But it's pre-time logically, as in time has not entered into it yet.
Mm. So all of time is at the mirror, then.
All of time, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, right.
Oh, which makes sense. Which makes sense with light.
I don't know if you...
Which makes sense with light because light experiences no time except at the mirror when it's changing directions.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. I don't think. I mean, there's obviously light pre-mirror, but the light. I mean, how can you measure it, right?
Yeah.
The light's only really interaction is at the point of the prism and the mirror. Those are the only two. Points where there is an interaction, so
yeah,
I don't know.
Huh.
I definitely feel like sometimes I can look back. It's sort of a state of supreme faith, maybe, where you just start believing everything is exactly for you. Does that make sense? Like it's perfect and it's a message. Everything. It's sort of a state of supreme paranoia, but in a very good way. In a way that well, that's full of faith.
It's exactly like paranoia, except it's opposite paranoia in every way.
Yeah. It's like paranoia in that you think everything is being directed towards you, but it's not. But it's full of faith. There's no fear.
It's full of love.
Yeah, and
right.
Yeah, that results in a very interesting thing because the message has always been for me pointing the way back.
Hmm.
It's like, hey, check this out, and then it starts. Molding the consciousness back towards God. Does that make sense? Like everything becomes a story about God, like in a message from God, and that yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
It feels like the whole world gets reversed. So instead of like you as consciousness trying to contemplate the material, it's like the material is telling you about instead of you going through life labeling the material starts telling you about yourself. Does that make sense?
Hmm.
It's like a total inversion of the way you see the world.
You're being
I manipulate you, I change you, I put meaning on you. All of a sudden life is giving you meaning. Like, let me tell you a story about yourself, Ben, you know?
Hmm.
This is who you are. Remember this thing, you know?
Hmm.
But it's very, I don't know.
Hmm.
Difficult to explain.
Have you read Perelandria? I think you have.
Yeah.
A couple times, maybe. Right at the end, there's that passage where the angels are describing, they're trying to explain to Ransom and the king of Perelandria, I forget his name, how thinking that Earth is like the center of creation, or Venus is the center of creation, or any one person is the center of creation, is like absolutely true and also like really misleading. And so they're explaining like everything is created for everything else. And so to think that you are the ultimate end of the universe is true. Like that's why the universe was created for you. For you. But to think that you can then demand anything of the universe would be foolish, because you are completely superfluous to the rest of the universe. Like,
right.
The rest of the universe was created for itself also, and you were created so that you could be there for the rest of the universe.
Right. Yeah, that's really good. I guess that is part of what the experience I've been exploring, and sort of this experience is that you can really totally believe that it's all about you. That's okay. That's a very valid, it's not complete, but it's
right.
A perfect. It's not complete, but it is a perfect understanding.
Right.
Makes sense.
Right.
And that it will, in fact, tell you very true things about your nature and about the nature of being and God. And it becomes a discussion with God.
Right. Right. And
discussion with God has turned into God's been like, hey, I'm doing this really cool thing. I'd love for you to be part of it. Well, let's do that. Does that make sense?
Mm.
And that's like, it's about, you know, creation. It's about this creative process.
Right.
Let's do this creative process, I guess is a good way to explain it. But that's via this interaction with God on this personal level, where it's like, it is just me and God. Like, everything is just me and God.
Right.
Yeah, it's very strange. It sort of demands the ability to let things be simultaneously different things, like simultaneous causality. I don't know. It's very strange. Tweaks the mind a little bit.
So something in The Witness, he's got a room where it's like an auto-visual room, and there's these videos that play. It's really pretentious. The Witness is super pretentious. You know how you play Braid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's got the poetry and stuff in it, and it's acting like, you know, this is all like very meaningful, and it's just super pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, it's pretentious if it's not true, but maybe it is true. So anyway, he's got this audiovisual room, and there's a movie that plays, and you like solve this puzzle, and you find this secret key, and it shows you a video. And they're all about perception and understanding the world and like how you see the world and stuff like that. But one of them is this lady, I don't know who she is. She looks very 70s, and she's talking about, let's see. She's saying, if you can, it's a very good exercise to stop needing things. Because when you need something, then it's on you to get it. It's on you to achieve it.
Mm.
And when you don't need anything, then you can really start to see things as they really are, and not just as what they mean to you.
Right. Right. There's no... a lot of this sort of... I mean, this whole perspective thing started... Well, it didn't really start. It certainly opened up when I first got high. But then I learned that most people weren't experiencing being high like I was.
Mm.
And then since then, I've learned to experience being high like other people experience it, which is shitty. It's like, I don't even know why you bother. Like, honestly, I don't know. I don't know why you'd even fucking bother.
Yeah, well, it's like when you get buzzed and you're like, wow, this is really fun. Like, I'm having a great time. And then they're like, no, you have to get super, super drunk. And it's like, no, that's terrible. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, but this, it's different. Actually, my version is way more trippy.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you do is you give into the paranoia, and everyone else is running from it.
Mm.
Everyone else is trying to stay grounded and trying to be like, okay, I'm going to be here in reality, but I'll just be stupid, right? It's like, well, if you're going to be here in reality, why do you mean be stupid unless you're anxious?
Mm.
But no, if you get into the paranoia, if you cannot get afraid of the paranoia and be like, oh shit, everybody's actually talking to me directly, then you realize, which it's an amazing moment, that they've always been talking to you directly. Does that make sense? Sure. But you haven't been able to see the meaning in it yet. But when you're high, because there's no more expectation, it shuts down your short-term memory loop. And so you're constantly in a state of being like a baby, in which the only questions you have are, who am I? What am I doing? Right?
Hmm.
And it turns out everything that people say and everything that there is, just everything, is telling you those, answering those questions. Who are you and what are you doing? And like it's so the whole universe at every moment is a constant, perfect message from God. Does that make sense?
Hmm.
It's very, very fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a kind of fear that people have that they'll forget who they are if they don't keep trying to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And or that they'll forget something important. Like, there's something really important about remembering. And there is, right? Like, that's another paradox, right? There is something important about remembering. Remembering is the whole point. But it's also completely unnecessary because the universe will continue existing and you will continue existing even if you don't remember yourself, right?
Right. But also, it's a question of what are you remembering?
Mm.
I mean, you can remember to do the dishes, and that's important. You can remember to do your homework, that's important. Those are important things, but there's another thing that you're supposed to be remembering, and that is who you are and what are you doing here. And really, that's the most important thing, and I've realized that most people are in a state of forgetting.
Mm.
That they've forgotten who they are, and they've forgotten what they're doing here. Even though the universe is just full of constant messages. In fact, it's nothing but messages about who they are and what they're doing, you know?
Mm.
You're dying, you're growing, you're ending, you're coming, you're going. Like, all those things are intersections. Does that make sense?
Mm.
They have an intersecting point. You know, you're having a good time. You're having a bad time. It's about good and bad. You know, like, constantly talking about good and bad. You know, I remember good things. I remember bad things. Can I trust the good things are here? If you simplify everything people say down to the essentials, hey, you realize that they're all having a conversation about really God, right?
Mm.
Can I trust God will be good? He was good yesterday, but will he be good tomorrow?
Mm.
He was bad. I think he was bad, you know?
Right. Was he really bad?
I don't know if I can trust God now.
Or was I bad? Was God bad?
Am I bad, right?
Yeah.
But these are the things that people are actually saying.
Yeah. You don't have to simplify it very. You don't have to simplify it very far.
No, you really don't. It is right there. It's right on the surface, but people don't take it seriously. And I think it ties into what we were talking about last week about not taking it seriously.
Mm.
It's like we don't take life seriously. We don't take our sorrow seriously. We don't take any of that seriously, right? At least most of us.
Mm.
When we're sad, we don't take that seriously. When someone else says, hey, I had a bad time, we don't take that seriously, right?
Mm.
Basically, we treat it like, oh, yeah. That's not true. That's not real. But it's like, no, that's real. Mm. That's the realest.
Right.
That's what we're doing here, in a sense, is we're having a conversation with other beings about these issues, right? And it's constant, and we don't treat it like that. We treat it like we're solving problems. And I'm not to say that solving problems aren't important. Certainly they are.
Sure.
You know,
well, if you really believe someone, then you will begin solving their problems, right? Like, if you really believe that there's another person there, then you are going to want them to have a good time instead of a bad time. And so you're going to try to do that, right? But,
but
a lot of
also,
times people...
if you believe what they say about reality, you're like, wow, this is bad, you know? This isn't just, you
inconvenient,
know what I mean?
Right.
Like, wow, they are really suffering.
Right.
That... now is my suffering because I've experienced it. Like, I've identified with it.
Mm.
It's become real for me. If they don't think God is good, then, well, wow, maybe I don't, you know, maybe he isn't. Or maybe we're talking about different things.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah, there's a weird truth to paranoia. It gets pretty trippy. It starts to get very turbulent if you don't know, if you are not well-grounded, and I realize that is what a lot of the spiritual teaching, I think, is helpful. I mean, it's helpful for many things, but one of the things it does is it permits you to enter into certain states. I mean, I'm sure there are many states I haven't experienced, but at least you could enter into this state of extreme paranoia. But if you have guiding this guiding framework in your mind, you know how to parse it.
Right.
It can be translated.
The love filters out the fear.
Yeah, you know that fear is about fear of fear. Like, you're able to remember that fear is fear. It sounds so stupid, but it's true. Like, fear comes from fear.
Yeah.
And that death comes from death.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you believe that fear is a real thing,
right,
then it will immediately feedback. It'll feedback loop itself.
Mm-hmm. And that you see that fear is also sort of necessary for this existence. Fear is what holds the consciousness in this domain. It's the resistance, right? And if you release the fear, it starts to, I don't really know how far it goes, but you start to go too.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, there's a self-sacrificial truth to staying in this reality in order to do God's work. And you accept some level of fear, mm-hmm, like almost consciously as a burden.
Mm-hmm. Well, the more you're capable of not accepting it, the more you accept it.
Yeah, the more you're able to accept it voluntarily. Like, I will believe this, not because I have to, but because you believe it.
Right.
It's an identification. It's a radical identification with reality.
Yeah.
You become very fluid. You can move up and down.
Mm.
Because you can give it up. You're like, I can take on your fear, I can give up your fear.
Mm.
Anyway, I know it's all very strange, and I don't want to sound like I'm some guru here. I'm not. I just been exploring it some, and it's interesting.
Mm. Kevin, you there?
I think Travis is here.
Is it Travis?
I am here.
It's Travis! I didn't recognize the ceiling light.
Yeah. It's actually, I've actually become a light. I've been enlightened.
There you go.
Exactly.
Everything else has been enlightened, because now you are the light.
Well, actually, I found it really sucks. You literally just turn into a light, and then you just sit there and watch.
You're enlightening.
And now you've given the light to us.
Yeah, you're enlightening us.
Yeah. You're the Buddha right now.
That seems like a really shitty job. I don't want
it. It is. That's what we were just saying.
Yeah, that
it's
is.
The worst.
It literally, the Buddha gave up nirvana so he could be a light for people. Travis, the wisdom. Wisdom without effort.
See, you're enlightening us still. It's true. You're saying it like it's a joke, but it doesn't have to be a joke.
But exactly. That's what I was talking about, the paranoia. You can actually, like, this conversation is utterly true, and you can take it utterly seriously if you can see it in the right perspective. And it doesn't matter if someone was joking or not joking. It matters not at all. It's like you can't not. And that's like for me the meaning of the word, where it's like the word comes to you. But it's not that the word wasn't coming to you before. It's that like the suddenly you see. Does that make sense? And like the word is there. The word is like
You know, this actually kind of hit me to just before I was like actually I was here for a little bit, but I was untangling my headphones. They were untangled, like the most complicated, hard thing possible. I was untangling them, and I was actually kind of enjoying it. I was like, this is what I want to do for a job. I want to untangle headphones. And
yeah.
I really enjoy untangling headphones. I was like, that's probably what I want to do with life. I just like untangling things.
Yeah, that is what we're doing with life, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's fun about it. It's like we're taking a tangle, and we're untangling it.
I was actually really tangled headphones. It's probably back when I was like a little kid, like because I was like way worse when I was a kid, as far as ADD wise. But one of the few things I could sit and do for a very, very long time was untangle fish line.
Oh.
I really got a kick out of untangling it and untangling it and getting it all straight and lined up again. Even though I just got to cut it and like went on with it, I just liked untangling it. I don't know, I just remember that.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, I'm doing it.
Yeah, something I've been thinking about is like, how do you ground yourself? There's stories of, I don't know if they're true, but I mean, there's stories, so what it's worth, there's stories of these gurus who will be, you know, very spiritual or whatever, but they'll deliberately take on vices so that they can not die. Does that make sense? Of course, it could just be manipulative bullshit, but, like, for example, they'll, like, eat too much, and be like, well, I eat too much so I can not die, because if I don't eat too much, then there's nothing, there's no fear keeping me here anymore. Does that make sense?
Mm.
I'm not really sure how true that is, or if you really need fear at all, but it seems like maybe you do, in a sense. Like, even Jesus shows fear, right? When he's going to the cross, he takes on
he's
pain.
Afraid.
Like, why is he? Yeah, why? He's afraid. Yeah, I think there's some deep truth to that about incarnation and about taking on other people's, purposefully taking on suffering, even though you know that it's not true. You like believe it just for someone else's sake.
People just don't realize then that I have the best auto rifle, BP auto rifle.
They don't even know that you have the best.
They don't even know, and I just blast them in the face. And they're like, "There's no way you can hit me from this far at that range and this head." I'm like, "Yes, I can."
You're sitting way back, not even trying, and you're still just so powerful.
Like, people think they have hard light. And they're like, "Oh yeah, hard light. I can annihilate them." I cannot go against the shot. Cannot go against the shotgun. So, you know what? Destiny changed their matchmaking, and now it's like really bad. They tried to improve it, but they made it.
Is that problematic?
Oh, sorry.
So, what else is good, Paul?
Well, I was watching your video, and I thought to myself that I should get a video capture card for my fancy camera. And
cool.
Now I'm reading about video capture from the A7S and trying to figure out how it works and stuff.
Nice.
Any of you guys know how to like make a tiny little Bluetooth speaker? Like tiny, I'm talking like real, real tiny. I can fit inside a pen.
A speaker?
Yeah.
I'm looking it up on Newegg right now. Bluetooth speaker, sing my song. Pulse wireless Bluetooth speaker. You wouldn't get very good bass. It'd be super tinny. It'd be like really high pitched. Just because of the physics. So, okay, here's something interesting. The sounds you can hear go from being about 20 meters long to about 2 millimeters long.
That is very big difference.
I think I want to make a Bluetooth speaker that can connect to those digital pens. And so that way when you can like attach to your digital pen, and if you lose it, you can like go to your phone and like have it beep.
Ah.
So you can find your...
There you go.
Because I've lost like two of them, and it's cost me over $100 to buy.
Okay. Okay. So what you need is a Bluetooth direction finder. You need like a Bluetooth homing beacon thing.
Yeah.
Bluetooth homing sensor. Yeah, you can get a beeper. Like that wouldn't be hard. I don't know how you would get it to turn on. You need some sort
of.
It
only needs to turn on when it gets activated.
Yeah. You might be able to do that. Just like put a tiny little beeper on it, but it would drain the battery pretty quick. Home.
But it would. But the Tile app, that Tile thing, that thing beeps, and I don't have to replace battery at all.
I don't know what that is.
You know the Tile?
Nope.
It's this little white Tile you can attach to your keychain, and then you can it connects to your Bluetooth.
Huh.
And then it like you can like use GPS, or you can just like when you're within range, you turn on your Bluetooth, and then you can have it beep.
Neat.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
I don't know.
Just do that, but smaller.
I don't know how you would do that. If you want it super small, you basically have to get a surface mount electronic device, and that's how you do it. You get an SMD, and then the Bluetooth device, when it turns on, does it have like a light or something when it's on? Because you basically need to tap into some sort of power from the device when it's on, but not when it's off, right? Because otherwise you just beep constantly.
Yeah. It's like the Tile app is like this. It's this mini. It beeps when I like turn on my Bluetooth on my phone, and then if I'm in range, I just press a button on the app, and then the Tile will beep. There's no like it's like a completely encased Tile. So it doesn't just drain. It doesn't use that battery unless I am pinging in it. Right, so probably like an RFID or something.
Hmm. All right, Mouser Electronics, I think, is what you're looking for. Beeper. Nope.
Yeah, I've been trying to look it up on the internet. I haven't been able to find it, but you guys seem to have a bunch of different, like, talents, so I thought maybe one of you guys knew electronics like that.
Yeah, well, you can get a tiny little buzzer that'll just, like, it'll just go beep.
That's all I needed to do, and it just needs to be able to connect.
Okay,
the thing is, like, a lot of these pens already have Bluetooth in them, so all it needs to do is to tie into that Bluetooth that's already there.
So you need to figure out what voltage it runs on.
Okay.
And you need to figure out how much power it draws. Here, I'll post you a link. This is just some audio.
The thing is, if you could figure out how to do it, you can add it to as an add-on to any all these digital pens people have, and then just drop ship it at that point.
How do I chat in here? Wait, I want to paste the chat in the chat thing. Share screen, full screen, original help. Come on, Hangouts, help me out. Help your brother out, Hangouts. Maybe I have to do it in the chat window. Here we go. There we go.
Oh man, Destiny's chat.
It's a link. I posted a link in the Hangout thing. Mouser sells tons and tons of electronics components. So you can get...
Okay.
Like, here we go. Here's a tiny little surface mount audio indicator. What are the dimensions? 3 millimeters tall.
Oh.
Smaller than your fingernail. Oh, it's kind of wide. See, the thing is about audio stuff is that the smaller it is, the higher pitched it is. So if you have something that's... like 3 or 4 millimeters wide, the sound it's going to be able to make will be at the very upper end of your register of hearing. Like, it'll be a tiny little whine. It won't even sound like a beep. And that's really hard for you to place, the high pitch stuff, because the frequencies are so high that your ears, the spacing of your ears doesn't help you. Like, the sound wave will hit one ear and then the other ear, and normally you can tell where it's coming from because the lower frequencies, you can hear the phase difference, and so you can tell the direction from that.
Yeah.
But if it's so small, the phase difference doesn't make a difference because there's so many different phases between your right ear and your left ear that your brain can't track it. And then the other thing that you can do is the shape of your ear can tell you what direction it's coming from because the way it refracts around your ear will also tell you direction. But the really high frequencies are so small that they refract around your ear geometry. And so that can't tell you what direction it's from either. So that really high-pitched whine, the only way you can locate it, basically, is by getting closer or further away from it. Which is why mosquitoes, that really high-pitched mosquito whine, like, you can't tell where they are around your ear, so you just have to, like, wave your hand wildly. It's because your brain can't, there's no way for it to know where it is around you. So if you want to have a locating device, it's going to have to be big. Bottom line is, if you want to be able to locate it, it's going to have to be probably the size, the diameter of a pen, and the bigger the better.
Well, that's fine. I mean, instead of, like, making it, like, parallel to the pen, if I made it that it could go inside the pen and be perpendicular to it, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know what size or kind of thing you're talking about, like, pen-wise, but there are a lot of options. I put a link there. There's tons of options. There's 88 pages of, like, I don't know how many things. 2,000, over 2,000 devices options that you can use for audio indicators.
Oh, wow.
Possibilities are great. Oh, yeah, here you go. You just get a piezo. You get a flexible... Is this flexible? Maybe piezoelectric diaphragm. Might be flexible. You might be able to get a flexible piezoelectric diaphragm, and then you can just wrap it around the outside of the pen.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be perfect.
Yeah, that might work. Anyway, take a look at the link. You're going to have to bust your pen open and figure out the internal voltage, or look it up somewhere, you know, I don't know, they got a user manual or something. And then wire it up and see what happens. You might need an amplifier or something like that. But
so you said a piezo?
Yeah. I posted a link there. There's a whole ton of them there. But
oh, okay, yeah. I'm like looking, I'm still on that one. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Steady warble, ringer, pulse. If you look under, there's a bunch of filters at the top. So you can see tone. You can
get
like buzzers or chimes or chirps or whatever. Continuous 15 seconds, continuous 30 seconds. Whooping, and then the sound pressure level, you can get great googly moogly, 127 decibels, that'd blow your ears out. I kind of want to see what options, 127, one remaining, applied filters, I want to see what this thing is. What is it? Oh, it's like a klaxon. That's sweet.
A piezo?
Self-contained indoor-outdoor siren. There you go, you just strap your pen to that thing. Tether, that's your solution. You get a tether, put a keychain on it. With a big, fluffy, stuffed animal.
You just tie your keychain to yourself.
That's right. Cybernetics. Implant the pen in your finger.
Implant. Swallow the pen.
There you go.
You can't lose it.
Never lose.
There's this guy who implanted a high-strength magnet in his finger, and then he could use it to locate north by just rotating his finger around and feeling how it was affected by the Earth's magnetic field.
It was very weird.
It allowed him to... It basically gave him a magnetic sense, like a sense of magnetism.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Also, his hand sucked everything that was metal. Maybe not so awesome.
think humans actually already have a magnetic sense.
Oh?
Yeah, I think so. We're just not very good at reading it.
Oh, maybe.
Well, here's an interesting question I've been thinking about. We can discuss. All right. Divorce and polygamy, according to the Bible, let's talk about it.
I think we need a jingle for Spooner Talk for, like, let's talk about this topic. It's going to be real fun.
Make one. I mean, just edit it in.
There we go. Done.
Like, boop, boop, boop. So I was looking into it, and I just don't think, I don't buy any of the arguments.
You don't buy any of the arguments. Everyone is wrong.
Because, you know, Jesus says, anyone who adds anything to the law or takes away anything, that's not good, right? One jot or tittle. So then Christians immediately come along and they just add, like, all these rules, like, you can't get divorced, you can't do all this. And I can see that maybe those might be, like, ideals, but you should not make them rules. Like, there's a difference between ideals and rules, and there's a reason there are rules. Does that make sense?
Well, Jesus also says, like, that the law says you can get a divorce because your hearts were hard, but you shouldn't do it, right?
Well, he's just pointing to the fact that, you know, the principle of the rule is this, right? Like, this is the deeper thing. But he doesn't even say you shouldn't get divorced. That's not what he says.
Right. He says you caused her to commit adultery.
He says if you divorce your wife for any reason except infidelity, then you cause her to commit adultery. So, in other words, you're culpable for her sin. But that isn't even against divorce, right? But he's saying, in this case, you're culpable. But then it's juxtaposed next to the thing saying, if you hate or even call your brother an idiot, you have murdered him. So then, like, obviously, if you're weighing living in a relationship in which there's hate versus divorce, you know, it's like, well, yeah, both are bad, but one is murder and the other one's adultery. So I don't think you can make a rule. I don't think you can or should make any sort of rule based off of that insight that Jesus is giving. And clearly he didn't mean for the rules to change, right? I don't think. Anyway, that's my thoughts. What are your thoughts?
So your thoughts are that nothing is not allowed.
That this original law still applies.
Well, because, like, if you commit adultery, though, the punishment is death. So it's not really,
right.
Like, it's not really a lesser thing. It's just like, oh, well, this is also a bad deal.
Right, but it's only once. Does that make sense? You can kill someone over and over and over by hating them over and over and over. I feel like, in any case, even if you can't do that arithmetic, like, which I agree with, like, maybe you can't compare them, well, then you certainly can't make a strong case that you shouldn't get divorced ever, because there's no way to prove that it would be a better or worse case. Does that make sense? Obviously, getting divorced is worse than the imaginary idealized case in which everyone gets along and everything's great, right? But that isn't reality, and the law is written for reality, not. So the fact that Moses made an exception because of people's lack of faith isn't a smack on Moses or the law. Like, the law is made for people who don't have faith.
I think you should read Romans 7 and 8.
What does that say?
I don't know, it's something I ought to sit down and reread again, because I was reading it the other day, and it talks about when you're being a slave to the law, but in righteousness. I think it's time about what you're talking about, is there's the law, and then there's being, it's the act, that tension of being saved, and yet to be saved. I would say there is something wrong about getting divorced, but it doesn't, like, necessarily mean that.
No, I mean, I can agree that there might be something wrong with it, but you shouldn't. The point I'm making is you should never make a rule about it. Does that make sense? It's not wrong to be like, yeah, I don't think this is ideal. Of course, I think that's very reasonable. But you should never, like the Catholic Church, for example, made a rule saying you can't get divorced. Well, why would you do that? Does that make sense? That's a terrible rule. It may be a great ideal, but ideals and rules are different. And, like, it's, my point is that Moses didn't screw up. Jesus wasn't saying that Moses screwed up the law by letting people get divorced. He was saying that the law is that way because you need it to be that way, because you don't have faith. That's a given of reality. And so all laws should be made with that in mind.
Well, it's like this, Ben. You cannot go to heaven by never getting divorced, you know. But you can definitely, it just makes things harder. It makes being faithful harder when you get divorced.
It's not an ideal thing, but neither is it an ideal thing to live in a relationship that is chronically bad, you know. That's also a terrible thing. And I think making a rule saying you can't get divorced is a ridiculous sort of, and even heretical thing, because it very clearly says don't change the law. All right, polygamy. Polygamy is totally in. Okay, this gets back to adultery.
I'm gonna interject here for a second.
Okay.
The tile, basically just like get one of those and chain it to your pen thing, because that's basically what you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
this
just
was
get,
something.
Just get one of those things. Get a ball chain, that, like one of those little tiny ball chains, right? And put it through the hoop there, and then just like super glue it to your key, and Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. I was like, man, if I could just get something that I could like basic and then sell it, it'd be cheap to make and easy to sell. You know, that's what I was also thinking.
Well, but I mean, that's what they've done, right? If you want to make it like some other thing, go to Tile and say, hey, you know what would be sweet? Take your technology and make it into an adhesive strip, right? Like a little adhesive thing that you can, like a long strip that you can stick onto stuff.
Yeah. Because
that's basically what you're saying, right? Is like some sort of long adhesive thing or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And have a conversation with them about the technology and like what's involved in it. Because they already have the manufacturing. They've already got the market cornered for that.
I wish you could buy a tile and send it to China and like make people that use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, but except you want to take it apart and like reconfigure it. I mean, how much do these things cost? $20? $25? Yeah.
Yeah, $25.
Yeah,
oh,
just
yeah.
buy one and smash it open with a hammer and see what's inside.
I think I'm going to do that. I'm definitely going to do that.
Or if you've got access to a backscatter X-ray machine or something, take it to the dentist's office and have them take an X-ray of it.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the things I want to look into, because I just think the potential is just awesome. If you can get it, like, small enough.
All right. So I'm going to look up divorce in the Bible.
Divorce in the Bible. Okay. On this topic, according to the Torah, there's no explicit... obviously, polygamy is permitted. But also, adultery is when a married woman sleeps with someone who's not her husband. Adultery is not when a married man sleeps with someone who's not his wife. That is not adultery.
What is
according to the Torah? It's forbidden, rabbinically forbidden, and it's looked down on, but it's not adultery. Does that make sense?
Thou shalt not commit adultery.
Because you can have polygamy. So obviously a married man can have sex with a woman, with another woman. Not only that, but also you can have sex with an unmarried woman. That's not adultery either. That would just be sex with an unmarried woman, which isn't against any of the rules explicitly, although it is discouraged by the tradition.
I'm reading the first, it looks like that is true. If a man committeth adultery with another man's wife.
Right. That is what adultery means.
That's true. Yeah, if you have relations with a virgin that you're not married to, you're supposed to marry her. You're supposed to pay the bride price. You have to pay. One way or the other.
Yeah.
If her father will allow it, you are also supposed to marry her. It's assumed that you'll marry her, because you've already paid for her, so why wouldn't you?
Yes, but if she's not a virgin, that doesn't apply. Now, you could say the principle applies, but I'm just saying the legal reading of it. Does that make sense? And then furthermore, concubinage is not forbidden. So, I mean, a man could have a wife and a concubine, and that would be fine. There would be nothing against that. And this is all the way up until Jesus' time. Like, in Jesus' time, that would be okay to have a concubine. That would be acceptable.
So, basically, between consenting adults, everything goes. As long as the woman is
women,
not
as
married.
As long as you're not a married woman,
right.
You can have sex. However, it's under the Jewish tradition discouraged, because they believe sex within marriage is very holy. And it's like special, and you should. That's like what you should do.
Yeah, there's a lot of symbolism attached to it.
Right, but there's no explicit prohibition against anything, which is very interesting, because it's sort of like the strict monogamy of Christianity kind of grew out of Roman monogamy, because the Roman system was very monogamous.
Huh.
So their strict monogamy is what sort of why you I see this strict monogamy in Christianity, because it's a Roman, I mean, they're translating it into a Roman culture in which you have one wife, you know. Anyway, I'm not really sure if that helps us practically in any way, but it's interesting.
Yeah, after his neighbor's wife. That is interesting. I had never noticed that.
Yeah, I mean, if you go look up Jewish, like the Orthodox Jewish, I think it's Chabad.org. It's Orthodox Jewish sort of like education organization. They will explicitly say, yes, adultery is, you know, only between a married woman and someone who's not her husband. But then they go on to say, you know, according to our tradition, you know, and teachings, et cetera, et cetera. But this isn't, like, there's no explicit.
It's not as serious in other cases. It's still serious, but not as serious.
Right. Now, part of that is because, part of it is, like, no sane woman back in the day would want to have sex without some protection or relationship, right? Because she's going to get pregnant.
Right.
So you don't really need to have, like, you know, like the motives, the incentives are there for people to have relationships.
Right. The incentives are all on the woman's side to not get pregnant, because that's a huge burden and that she has no leverage without
marriage.
Right,
so then
marriage.
She barters her sex for security, and then, you know, then you get a relationship.
Right.
But, you know, obviously in modern culture, not so much the case anymore. I don't really know what that means. Actually, some Jewish people, Jewish, even conservative people, have been talking about bringing back concubinage, just because it would be a more
honest
and disciplined way of dealing with girlfriends.
Hmm.
So people already, basically, girlfriend is a concubine, right?
In the modern parlance, sure.
In the modern girlfriend is a concubine. She has no legal protection. You can divorce her easily. She can divorce you easily.
Right, but you do have a special relationship.
Right, and it's understood socially that you are exclusive, usually. Right. But, so instead of, you know, like currently adults don't take people's relationships seriously, or relationships aren't really taken seriously until they're married. Mm-hmm. So, really, that's kind of silly. Like, why? I mean, obviously it's not. Obviously, well, there's a difference between being married and being concubine.
Right.
But why?
Well, people kind of tend to push all that off onto the government and the legal system, right? It's like, well, if the government's not going to do anything about it, then I can't do anything about it. But that's not really true either, right? Like, it's basically saying that social pressure is meaningless when, in fact, social pressure is more powerful than government.
Oh, far more powerful. Yeah. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. Let's adopt that terminology. We should just adopt it.
No, I really feel like we should, because the magic, like, even if I have kids, like, I would not try to shame them into getting married, I don't think. I think that's kind of unhealthy. But I would tell them, like, hey, if you are with a girl, like, she's your concubine, you better treat her right. You know, like, that's how I see it. That's how you should see it.
Right. Right. This is a special relationship, and it deserves to be taken seriously.
Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't take anything unseriously. But obviously, because of, you know, legal pressure and et cetera, modern, I don't think you want to encourage kids to get married right away. I think you should give their relationships the status of respect, which the word girlfriend or boyfriend, it's magic, and it's a magic of disrespect, right? Of de-escalation, of saying, oh, they're a friend, right?
Mm, yeah. Yeah, it's all implicit.
Yeah, it is a very powerful, implicit disregard or dismissal of the whole thing.
Hmm. Right.
Anyway, so I think concubines could be a good thing. I don't think polygamy is really... it seems very, very, very problematic in practice. I was thinking about how so many men don't want to be fathers anymore. There really is a lack of fathers, that maybe it might become appropriate. It might become appropriate...
For men who want to be fathers.
For men who want to be fathers to just be fathers to more women. You know.
Husbands for more women, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think you need a kind of a radical change in how people think about things. I mean, it already happens, but, right? A lot of single moms, there's so many single moms, and a lot of them, you know, like, the number of men who have fathered children with single moms is probably much smaller than the population of single moms. So you already have this polygamous situation, except without any of the support or structure or, right?
Mm.
But the pressure is already there. So it's like, maybe it would not be such a terrible thing to normalize polygamy. Well, for one, it would just permit you to breed more. So that's good. Two, more people have dads. That's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
So I don't know. I think maybe that might be appropriate at some point. Maybe even now. I don't know. Just throwing ideas out there.
I don't think
ladies would be really into it.
You can be married to multiple women if you want to.
Really want to volunteer for this thing. I feel like it would be really, really hard. But just saying in theory.
Yeah. Well, it's not exactly something that any of us are in a position to volunteer for. Let's put it that way, right? Like it's not your choice to say, all right, I'm going to do this, because it's a cooperative thing.
Of course. Yeah, it would at that point be, and actually having spoken to a lot of polygamous Muslims in Iraq, usually the wife is the one who's very involved in choosing.
Hang on.
The other
I'm searching scriptures here and I found something interesting. This is, I don't have the chapter version. Book of Mark, chapter 10. What therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. And in the house his disciples asked him again of the matter. And he said to them, whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another, committeth adultery against her. That is in direct contradiction to what you were saying earlier.
No, because he was talking about the Quran, or the first Bible.
He was saying that the Bible never says that there is...
I'm saying the Torah never
the
says.
The Torah never says. Okay, so here it is in the New Testament. Jesus
right.
teaching in Mark 10, whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another committeth adultery against her. And if a woman shall put away her husband and be married to another, she committeth adultery. So it seems like the Bible does actually say that adultery is both ways.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the New Testament. I'm going to keep searching, but I just found that.
Oh, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, again,
Book
that's talking about divorce, so...
Yeah, yeah. So
you're looking at polygamous culture.
Here's the book of Luke, chapter 16.
Right.
The Law and the Prophets were until John, since that time the kingdom of God is preached, and every man presseth into it, and is easy for heaven and earth to pass, and for one tittle of the law to fail. Whosoever putteth away his wife and marrieth another... committeth adultery, and whosoever
right.
marrieth her that is put away from her husband hath committed adultery.
However, think about this. Polygamous culture,
adultery.
He's talking to a polygamous culture. Polygamy maybe is not normal, but it is accepted.
Mm-hmm.
That means that a polygamous man can't divorce his wives. He has to stay polygamous, right?
Right. Okay. So it seems like the expectation is strongly on the side of preventing married women, but in both Luke and Mark, there seems to be indication that it goes both ways.
Right.
Look up fornication.
But you have to. I think it is important to take what Jesus says not as a rule, not as something that should be a rule. Does that make sense? It's something you should do, but you should not make it a rule.
You don't make. You cannot write the law. Is what you're saying?
Yeah. Do not write, but because that's what Christians are always in the. State of doing is they're always trying to write these rules, but it's like, yeah, you should do this, but it should not be a rule, because that would be overstretching, you know, like it should be something you do because you want to do it, because you're something that you've brought extra in a sense, right? You're like, I'm doing this because I love what's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the whole gospel is, right?
It is.
You're doing it because it's good.
Right, but I think Christians often fall into this trap of, oh, this is good, therefore I'm going to shame and control and everyone into
yeah.
doing it. And it's
exactly.
like, that's, no, I mean, the law is the law. That's
so
what
you're saying is that
do.
That Christianity is trolling.
Christianity is trolling. I think it is. Trolling in a good way.
But in a good way.
Well, like I was talking about, but it all starts with the heart, right? Like, if you don't, if you're doing something just to do it because it's good and not because you want to be closer to God, then it doesn't do anything. But if you do it because you want to be closer to God and your relationship with Him, and then you do it because of that, then it's good. That's the whole thing about, like, faith that works is dead. It's not talking about, like, look good at the need to.
Okay, so that, I guess, brings up an interesting point. Like, what should there be a difference? I mean, does the law have, I guess, what place does the law have? I guess, does it have any place for us? Is it even at all relevant? Maybe it's not. Maybe all we care about is the ideal, you know?
So, what's the distinction between adultery and fornication?
Fornication in the Greek means incest, adultery, or whoring.
Hmm.
That's what it means.
Well, because it shows up in the Old Testament, too.
Oh, that's a different meaning.
I mean, I don't know what it's translated from, but like when God's describing Israel as a wayward wife in Ezekiel,
uh-huh.
Ezekiel 16, the classic, right? Like, I found you and you're naked and I clothed you and put garments on you and then you rebelled against me. You're like, you turned against me. And the word he uses there is fornication.
Hmm.
And then later,
know.
He
yeah,
uses fornication three times. And then later in the chapter, it's translated as adultery.
Yeah, you'd have to look up the Hebrew. Maybe
but it might be more like a moral sense. Like, the adultery is a legal term, right? Saying, oh, we have a legal agreement and you're violating the legal agreement, right? But then fornication is the moral term, saying, hey, this sex is out of line, right? Like, this is unacceptable. This is not the correct way of doing things. It's like a sexual sin,
maybe.
Whereas adultery is like a sexual legal infraction.
I'd encourage you to look up the Hebrew. Yeah. You might learn exactly what it is.
I don't have the Hebrew in front of me.
No. You have the internet.
I do.
The internet has everything.
Whoever puts away his wife, save for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery.
Right, in that case, she's committed it, so it's not your fault.
Right. You don't cause her to commit adultery. But why wasn't it translated adultery there then, right? Like, whoever shall put away his wife, save for the cause of adultery, causes her to commit adultery.
In the Greek, fornication means whoring, incest, or adultery.
So it's a broader term.
Yes.
Hmm.
But all fornication a married woman would be doing would also be
adultery.
Adultery. Nature.
For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, and blasphemy. Mm-hmm. Ooh. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lascivious, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, and foolishness. Right? Like, if you were going to make a law against all those things... If you're going to make a law against any one of those things, you should probably include all of those things, right?
Right.
But then, if we're going to say that we should not make a law about one of those things, do we also say we make no laws about any of those things?
I think the law is the law. The law is there as a teacher, and it's not supposed to be overbearing.
Hmm.
So I think it's important to know that the law is written how it is written for a reason. And that, yes, you can go above the law, and the point is to love the law so much that you want to go above it, but not to inflict that on other people. That's not the point.
Hmm.
Now, on the topic of polygamy, there's no injunction against polygamy, although when it's talking about elders, it says that it should be a man of one woman.
Right.
But, I mean, that doesn't mean that you can't be in the church and not be polygamous.
Right, right. There are very few elders, right? And that's kind of the point,
right.
Is that these are the,
right.
the special subset.
Right. And there's no actually Greek word for husband or wife. The words are just man and woman. So anytime it talks about husband or wife in the Greek, it's just saying man or woman.
Hmm. Well, it certainly seems to be that there would be a word for married, right? Like a modifier? An
adjective? Yeah, there is, but it's not used very often.
Hmm.
There's no, in the Greek culture, there were marriage ceremonies, but again, it was not like, I mean, they're not.
So you're saying
the
Romans
whole
idea were
much... of there being a marriage registry, like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're officially married, you're officially not married. That's a modern thing.
So what you're saying is that the Romans had a much more formal system than the Greeks.
Yes, but also just ancient societies didn't have a formal. I mean, what is? I mean, you could have a ceremony. Maybe you don't have a ceremony, but in the end,
well, it seems like okay.
If
we're going
to say you're married, then you are married.
Well, yeah, but we're going to go back to the ancient system. The ceremony is important to the woman because it's saying that it's notifying the community that the
Correct.
Community is supposed to enforce this contract,
yeah.
right? So,
yeah.
So to say that there wasn't a ceremony, I think, is misleading. There almost certainly
I mean,
was
it could
a,
be
ceremony.
A ceremony, but it's not.
There almost
it's
certainly
not.
Was, right? Like, what would be the point if there wasn't a ceremony? The ceremony is the marriage, right? Because it's asking the culture to enforce this contract. It's asking the group, right?
Yeah,
if it's just between the two of you, then it doesn't. Yeah, like it doesn't.
I agree, it's important, but it's not. It's not necessary.
What about with like Isaac and when Isaac's when Sarah Rachel when Rachel gets brought back to Isaac,
mm-hmm.
and they just go into his mom's tent, and then it's like, ba-dum, that's it.
Right.
I mean, that is the only requirement for marriage in Judaism is actually you can be married just by having sex. That's a legitimate marriage under Jewish law. You say, we had sex, and we're married. And they'd be like, okay, we will acknowledge that as marriage.
Right.
So the ceremony is obviously good, not necessary.
Okay, so 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is pretty clear. Like, I guess the question, when you say that we shouldn't make a law about divorce or about anything.
Not much. One second.
Is what, to whom are you addressing that, right?
Well, what does 1 Corinthians say?
1 Corinthians 7, Paul says that if you are a believer and you are married to an unbeliever and the unbeliever leaves, the unbeliever wants to divorce you, basically, then you should consent to it. But if you are married, if you are a believer and you are married to a believer, you should not leave each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, that kind of seems like it's saying within Christianity, it's not acceptable, right? Like, if you're going to ask for the direction of the scriptures clearly say, do not divorce.
Well, no, actually, it doesn't clearly say that.
It says in 1 Corinthians 7, he says, if you are...
Yeah, but he's directly contradicting Jesus when Jesus says any divorce is bad. And then Paul's saying, well, actually, not if you're Christian. Not if they're not a Christian, then it's all right, right?
Well, he's saying you can allow it, right? Like he's saying that if they have made the decision,
right,
then you can consent to that decision that someone else has made, right? Like they have made the decision.
Consent to a divorce? You know, you're like, no, I don't consent.
Well, yeah, you can. I mean, that's otherwise why would he have said it?
Yeah, but you know, think about that though. It doesn't actually make any sense. You can consent to one type of divorce, but not the other type.
Well, he also says that you can consent to marriage. He's like, okay, here's the ideal. Here, I'll just read it. Concerning things where you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. Let every woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to his wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife to her husband.
That means man. That those words are man and...
The woman to her man.
So let every man have his own woman, and let every woman have her own man. That's what that literally... says. Go on.
The wife does not have power over her own body, but the husband, and likewise the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one another, except be it with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan not tempt you for your incontinency. But I speak this by permission, not of commandment, for I would that all men were even as I myself. But every man hath the proper gift of God, one in this manner, another in that. I say therefore to the unmarried and to widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. But if they cannot contain... Let them marry, for it's better to marry than to burn. And unto the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. Let not the wife depart from her husband. But if she depart, let her remain unmarried, or be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. But to the rest I speak, not the Lord. If any brother hath a wife that believeth not, and she be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. And the woman which hath a husband that believeth not, if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. But the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else your children are unclean, but now they are holy. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. For what know you, O wife, whether thou shalt save your husband? Or knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save thy wife? But as God hath distributed to every man, as the Lord has called each one, so let him walk. And so I ordain in all the churches.
So he's very explicit that these are his own opinions.
Right.
Because
right.
This is from God, these are my opinions. So I'm not even sure if you can take that as scripture at that point. It's like when someone tells you, this is my opinion, you're like, okay, I, you're wise, I respect that opinion, but I'm not going to treat that the same. Like he's explicitly telling you these are two separate things. This is my opinion, this is, you know.
Well, yeah, and he also bookends the chapter with, he also says, you know, she's happier if she is so abide. He's saying an unmarried woman, like if she's widowed, then she's happier if she so abide after my judgment. And I think also that I have the Spirit of God. So he's saying, okay, these are my opinions, but I'm pretty sure God is leading me to write this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I just don't think that's a good basis to make rules off of.
Well, no, I'm not saying anyone should make the rules. I'm just saying that Paul has laid down some rules. Like, if you're going to go somewhere, you don't even have to make up the rules. You just have to point to Paul.
He's writing it as his advice. It's good advice.
Well, that's what rules are, right?
No, I mean, a rule is implies consequences.
Right.
Advice doesn't imply consequences. It's just, hey, try this out. But where the church, if you're starting to sanction people, you know, you're starting to, you know, like with the Catholic Church, you know, obviously they straight up outlawed certain things. And then the church, the Christian church is responsible for a lot of the divorce laws because they took their idea of what was ideal and they made it into a actual law enforced by violence. And that is utterly the wrong idea. You know, and Christians will still stand by a lot of divorce laws because of religion. And that is utterly missing the point. That's my point. You should not make rules about it. You should keep it as an ideal, as something that you believe is right, but you should not make a rule about it. Because then what you're saying is that, like, oh, I figured this out better than God did. God already made rules, you know? And in his rules, you can get divorced really easily. Those are God's rules. Does that make sense? It's like, why are we giving people less liberty than what God provided? That makes no sense.
Well, on the one hand, no one is forcing anyone to become married. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, really, you're gonna put that burden on people? You're like, you can't have any respect in our society unless you get married, and the only way you can get married is to go through this ridiculously difficult, you know, set of agreements, and then you can't get out of it, and then we're gonna waste all your money. It's messed up. It is messed up.
Well, I mean,
and
if
result,
you,
it
if
makes
you're
people
asking...
not take relationships seriously because they don't want to get into.
Well, if you're asking someone what they want you to do in order to get their respect, then you can't really fault them for telling you, right? Like, our culture is saying...
No, it goes beyond respect, Paul. This is about... This is... Well, yeah, even that. It's like, Paul isn't telling people that you should shame and outcast people who don't do this. He's saying, this is my advice. This is how I think you should do it.
Sure.
And there's room for disagreement. And then he even says, also, that if there's disagreement, hey, to remember that we're all here in Christ, and it's more important that we should get along here. Then, and you know, his bottom lines is like, don't eat food that's sacrificed to idols, don't commit fornication, sexual sin, which is incest, whoredom, adultery. So like, no one's being kicked out of any early church for divorce. They may say like, yeah, that's not our ideal, but you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. No, because we don't know what they were doing in the early church, right? Like,
well, we know exactly what they said was, here is our command for the Gentiles, right?
Right, right.
And we know that they were all Jews, and Jews were fine with divorce.
Well, not all of them were Jews. I mean, like, Paul's whole mission is to the Gentiles, right?
Yeah, but it was, the original church was all Jews, and then they, like, okay, what are
no,
the Gentiles going to
yeah,
do?
So I,
and
I
the rules
mean,
for Gentiles
right,
are very minimalistic.
Yeah.
Now, so I see this all as, like, it is good, it is the ideal, but if you can't build a culture on it, that's different. You can't build like a set of rules. You should not make this you should not legalize this in any way. You should certainly not make it part of your legal system. That would be absurd.
Well, I mean, okay, so I guess I don't quite know what you're trying to say. Are you saying that we should not make like, are you saying that these are principles that we should not hold in our legal system?
Absolutely.
Okay, but like, I think that there are a lot of things that we shouldn't do in our legal system, but that's completely beside the point. Like, none of us are in the position to do anything about that, so I don't see why we should be...
Oh, no, absolutely we are. As Christians, we are absolutely responsible for almost all of the laws.
I'm not. I haven't made any laws.
No, you're not, but I'm saying is the church is.
Well, but I'm not in charge of the church either. Like, no one's putting me in a position of authority to do anything about that either.
So there needs to be a direct... practical implication for your life.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering. Like you seem to be very vehement that I believe you about this.
I think the church has done something really shitty, and
so I mean, you should be addressing
for a lot of problems.
You should be addressing the people who made
Jesus
those
got angry
right?
at the teachers of the law. All
right?
Right,
right.
Let me get a little mad.
But I'm not. I mean, like, I don't see myself as a teacher of the law.
I'm not mad at you.
Okay, so I'm not sure who you're mad at then.
I'm mad at the church. I'm mad at the teachers of the law. I'm mad at the people who distorted this and put it on people and put this burden on people, which is ridiculous, in my opinion.
Hmm.
That's what I'm mad at.
The works of the flesh are manifest. Fruit of the Spirit. Seems like we should memorize the works of the flesh as well as the fruits of the Spirit. Why don't we do that?
I don't know.
Do you know the fruits of the Spirit?
Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control.
Yep. Do you know the works of the flesh?
No.
Here we go.
Poopiness.
Adultery. Fornication. Uncleanliness. Lasciviousness. So all four of those are sexual in nature, right? Or physical, like intensely physical. Then there's idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, and variance. Emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and all such things. Because we have to make it into a song and memorize it or something.
I don't really know if that's helpful. I don't feel like I've learned a lot from that.
Hmm. Did you learn very much from the fruits of the Spirit?
Yeah, I feel like those were helpful.
Hmm. Oh, but did you learn them immediately at the time?
I don't know.
I think we can learn a lot from... It's certainly a longer list.
It is.
And it's ended with an ellipsis, right? Like, he's like... And just, you know, you can extrapolate from there and on all that stuff. I can't make a complete list. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. So that's probably what you're saying, right? That making a law, aside from the strict legal like meaning of what the law, it's just like the writing out a principle. Is provoking someone, right? Like, it's provoking them to make an error, right? You're saying, here's some extra rules that you need to follow if you want me to think you righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're provoking them to error. And
well, not only that, but you're not supposed to... You're supposed to presume the best about everyone, right?
Let us not be desirous of vainglory. And so that's also vainglory, right? Like, it's saying, okay, well, I want to be important, so I'm going to make a law. I want to be like Moses and be the lawgiver, right?
It's like, no, you're not.
Right.
If someone comes to you and asks your opinion about what is best in life, you should tell them what is best in life.
Right.
And of course, why would you not want what is best in life? But you shouldn't go around creating more laws than Moses made. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That makes...
Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another.
Yeah, because that's what I see all the time in the church, is they're envious of sin. They say it's sin, and then they're envious of it. They're like, you're getting away with this thing.
Hmm.
And it's envy. It's like, if you really believed it was bad, you wouldn't envy. You'd have a different attitude. You'd feel sad, at least, maybe. Maybe you'd be, like, worried. You know, I don't know, but you wouldn't go around being like, oh, you wouldn't be angry about it. It's absurd.
Envying one another. It seems like envying is kind of the opposite error, right? Like, vainglory is one thing. Provoking is one thing, and envying is one thing. And, like, envying is on the other side, right? It's saying, like, oh, I really wish that I had the... It's putting someone else above you, right? Saying, like, oh, this other person has it better than me, and I wish that I had their thing. And provoking is putting someone else below you and saying, oh, well, you know, you have to step up to my level. You have to step up to where I'm at.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And both of
them
are...
I guess part of it is I just feel like the whole New Testament needs to be interpreted in a purely positive way. Like, this, we are all good. Now let's do what's better. Like, everything is permissible. But not everything's beneficial. Like, that's the attitude with which I see everything in the New Testament. This is a good thing, but it's not a mandatory thing. It's not even something you should...
Don't get upset about this.
You should never get, like, angsty about it. Does that make sense? You should only try to see this stuff as something that's good and see it positively.
And if you want
if you
to
want
get angsty about something...
If you direction, you should go to the law. The
you
law
go to the Old Testament, right, right.
Don't
yeah.
do this, don't do that, etc.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of... There's all kinds of angsty stuff in the Old Testament.
Yeah, but, I mean, you should... The idea of taking a positive perspective and then trying to make a negative rule set out of it, I think, is utterly corrupting. Because it just leads into this arrogance and this, it becomes onerous and it misses the spirit of it. So, yeah, I mean, I have no problem with anyone advising people don't get divorced or like, hey, not getting divorced is the best thing. Like, yeah, I see the truth in that. But I don't feel like you should try to shame anyone for it either. Does that make sense? Anyway, because what are you going to charge them with? Like, what is your charge against your brother? You didn't live up to Moses' law?
So Anna's input is that divorce is not okay and that polygamy is okay.
Polygamy, okay, divorce, not okay. I mean, I guess it just depends what you mean by okay, right?
Which comes back to the very first brief foray that we had.
Mm-hmm.
So what is okay to you, Ben?
Everything's okay. Depends what you're trying to get. Like, not everything's okay for certain things. What do you want?
So to Anna, divorce is outside of Ben's universe.
I don't think we're in the same universe, though.
Well, so there you go.
And it goes back to the very first discussion we had about fear. Like, everything's okay. Like, there's nothing not okay. However, if you want to... live in certain people's universes, then certain things probably aren't okay. I don't know, depending on them. Or depending on what you want.
Wow. There's a very high density of fornication in Revelation where it talks about Babylon. Huh. Okay, so what you are saying is that as far as any enforceable law, any law enforceable by violence is concerned, all contracts... should have a easy escape clause.
Absolutely.
So that
the only reason it doesn't is because
so that it's easy to
use violence to enforce the morality, and then the lawyers got rich on it and they didn't want to change it.
So it's then it basically you want it to be hard for people to force other people to commit violence.
I didn't want it to be easy for people to get out of a relationship because they need to, because it's actually a good thing, because they don't have the faith to believe that it is not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I mean, like, the general principle is that it's not good to commit violence in defense of something that's difficult to escape from.
Yeah, I guess. There's just no reason for violence in that case.
Well, I mean, because this applies to the same thing as you feel strongly about legal loans and stuff, right? Like, there should easy way to get out of loans.
You're putting a heavy burden on someone. Why would you do that?
Right. So it's I think it's the same feeling, it's the same sensation, it's the same motive, right? Is that...
Yeah, I believe that it's just arrogance. Arrogance of people who decided that they were, like, they were moral and they could live up to this standard and that they're going to force everyone else to. I don't know, it's gross. But, and I kind of also question if you should even use shame. Shame is a sort of coercion. I'm not even sure if you should use shame to enforce any of these things. I know that's a very radical thought, but I think there's a difference between when someone asks your opinion on what's good, and you say, here's my opinion on what's good, you know, versus shaming someone. I feel like that's different. Like when you're going out of your, when you're purposely trying to shame someone to change their actions, that has a place, but I don't think you should do it for anything outside of like the law. Does that make sense? Like, if someone breaks their contract...
There needs to be a very strong justification for using shame.
I feel like there should be a very strong justification. I feel like we do it way too lightly. And...
Well, I think it goes to people... Like, if you shame somebody who you think is wrong, I think that shame is also a way of bullying people better about yourself. And like, oh, well, this person's really bad, because it's like, I think about Seth all the time. And he's getting better. He's not where he could be, but he's getting better. And people, especially in the church, have been awful to him. And it's like, yeah, you're awful to him because you think you're better than Seth is. But you know what? You're really not. And I think it makes people feel good to shame him and to make him feel bad for his decisions. It reminds them that they haven't made the same bad decisions. And I think that that part, at least for female standards, I know that women do.
Yeah, I think that's really good. So, yeah, I guess I think everything in the New Testament should be something you should not shame people about. It should be something you do simply because you believe it to be good, not because you believe it needs to be enforced on people. It's like, imagine you had something really, really good, you know, like a really nice car. When you go around being like, oh, you drive a stupid car, man. No, that would be arrogant. The only reason you do that is if you needed to pump yourself up, or if you maybe didn't actually believe your car was nice, right?
Yeah, it shows you were insecure. Yeah, yeah.
So there's a place for shame, but that's more like, hey, when this is going to cause a major problem in society, but the threshold for that is more along the Abrahamic law. Those are the issues that are going to cause major problems in society that you need to intervene on and shame people on. But they're not drugs. Like, drugs don't fall into that category, right? There's no rule against getting drunk. You should not shame people for that. That's right. Not a good thing. You shouldn't do it, but it's like, you know, why would you want to do it?
Yeah. Well, that goes back to Proverbs, right? Like, Proverbs exactly. Talks about being drunk, but the law doesn't talk about being drunk.
Yeah, and Proverbs also talks about how being drunk can be good for people.
Yeah.
So, but exactly, it's like you should not shame anyone for anything outside the law, I think. I don't think it has a place, and I think it shows insecurity and it shows a lack of faith that you have what's good.
Oh, faith in the belief that you have a good understanding.
Well, yeah, then that what you have is good. Imagine you have like a really delicious dessert, right? But the point is it's dessert. It's not necessary. It's not something, you know, like, that are not starving. It's dessert. It's great. But when you like start shoving it in everyone's face and be like, eat this. It's so good. Eat it. It's like, if at some point, it's like, why do you need me to eat that so badly? You know, unless you really...
Yeah. Like, tell me this is the most delicious thing you've ever had.
Exactly. I feel like that is the attitude the church takes towards morality, and it totally is a poison to the whole thing.
Mm.
I mean, when asked, why do you do what's moral, it would be great if more Christians said, because it makes me feel good. Like, because I like it. Because I love it, right?
Mm.
I don't need any other reason except that I love this. This is the best thing.
Answer,
it's all because God's going to reward me because I'm just having faith. And that's good. I mean, that's good. But the point is that you should be seeing why it's good inherently. And once you see really, truly that it's good inherently, then why would you ever shame anyone for not having a good thing? That's so ungracious.
You would pity them, right?
Yeah, you would be like, oh, man, I wish you could be here with me. And, but even that, you wouldn't shove it in their face too often. That would be very arrogant, and like it wouldn't be unhelpful. Does that make sense? But when asked, hey, man, what's good in life? Oh, let me tell you what's good in my life. I love doing, I love this stuff. You know, this is the good stuff.
Right.
It's a very different attitude than saying, well, I've lived up to these standards and you should too. And if you don't, then you're basically undermining my own belief that my life was worthwhile, which is the,
well, yeah. we do live in the end times, right? This is an age of faithlessness.
It's true.
Christ's question is still unanswered. When I return, will I find faith in the earth? Big shrug.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, I guess that's where my frustration is going to come. I feel like the church has become full of Pharisees, people who have made it into burdens, created all these burdens and put them on people. They don't actually believe that what they're saying is good because they're constantly trying to convince people like there's some secret reward coming. You know, you just, it's like, that's not, I mean, yeah, there is a reward, but you don't get it. The reward is not hidden. It's not a secret reward. And it's not like some, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but that's the way I see it.
Right. Yeah, it does, yeah, I agree with you. I feel like I'm there, like I'm with you there. I feel like we're on this journey together, Ben.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I feel like, I felt like, you've always understood where I'm coming from, at least, not agreed with me. It's more important that you understand than agree.
Mm. And yeah, I am also confused by people who are offended by, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, because there is a place for it, right? There is a place to be offended at sin, at imperfection, right? Like, why is this not perfect?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question to ask.
Disappointment. Yeah.
So there, I mean, there is a place for that, and you could be coming from a place of righteousness in expressing disappointment or even anger over someone's imperfection, right? Even if it's not against the law, right? If it's just like, well, this wasn't perfect. Like, I was really hoping to be perfect. But yeah, I think I agree with you that a lot of times it appears that other people... See, this is the problem, right? Like, it seems that your offense that you're taking is on, yeah. is about other people taking offense, hypothetically.
Yeah, offense.
Right? Like, it's a hypothetical offense. Like, you're not saying to me... Oh, Paul, you are holding this false standard and telling people, you know, they shouldn't get divorced or whatever.
No, but it's not entirely hypothetical either, I guess.
Well, I mean...
For example, Deborah's parents, right? They didn't get divorced because there was all this shame around it.
Hmm.
And the kids suffered a lot for it. I really think they should have gotten divorced. Like, that was a case where it's like, they were in a constant state of murder, and it was not a good thing.
Hmm.
But since there's no, because this had been made into a rule, a shame-based rule, that sin then was placed on the children. And the whole reason that Moses made it easy to, like, separate is because, probably, of the children. I mean, of the parents, too, but there was a reason for it. Anyway.
Hmm.
And then furthermore, just talking to people who don't seem to have faith that good is good, and that they're actually secretly missing out, and they hope it's super sweet in heaven, it's just so missing the point.
Well, I mean, there is a truth to that too, right? Where Paul says, hey, look, if we're not raised, like, if the dead are not raised, then our faith is in vain, and we should just, like, be partying all the time, because we're totally missing out right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he basically says that, right? He's like, hey, you know, like, it'd be super sweet if we're wrong to be... to not believe all these things that we believe.
Well, but I think that's more... I guess I read that more existentially.
Oh, he's saying, like, the universe is pointless if we don't...
Death is real.
Yeah.
Like, if death is the ultimate reality, then everything is meaningless.
So you may as well get as much out of it as you can right this instant, because there's no hope for tomorrow.
Right, but that's not necessarily because, like, you're looking forward to something in the future. It's that... the fact that death is not the ultimate reality permits you to have the faith in joy in the moment.
Mm.
Because it allows you, going back to the very beginning, to not remember yourself again.
Mm.
You can accept death because you can not remember yourself. That, to me, is the point. Hey, Kevin. Welcome.
Hello? Can't hear you. There was a rumble.
Tumbling.
There was a clunk of rumble.
He's like, oh gosh, this conversation... I'm out.
What happened to Travis? Is Travis... He disappeared.
Travis is out, too, apparently.
Yeah. He refracted back to the prism.
I know. It's just been me talking to myself the whole time.
No, it's everything talking to you, Ben. Everything's been talking to you.
That's true. That is true.
Kevin, we still can't hear you. Are you muted? Is the baby crying? That's probably why you're muted, huh?
It's like... his mic's working.
Yeah, there was like a response. There was a funny little...
Maybe it's code.
He's, help me. He's there with Luke. He's probably like, save me. Yeah, see, it sounds like you're responding, but it's just like a shuffly sound.
Oh, Kevin's coming. Maybe he's in the toilet.
Okay.
Wait, can you hear me?
What?
There we go.
We heard that.
Oh, weird. It's not coming through my headset. It's just going through my mic.
What? I don't know what that means.
Well, see, all the sound should be going through my headset, but...
You channeling all your sound powers into your headset?
Headphones. My headphones are too plugged in. What?
So, what's up, Kev? What's good in life?
Sounds about right. So, Ben, when are you coming down here?
I don't know. I'm thinking about buying a camper van, but I see if Mom and Dad will let me put it in the park, in the driveway. And Mom has been noncommittal, and I haven't wanted to bother her since she's...
Yeah, she's in the middle of lots of things.
Yeah.
Your dad said it was fine.
What's that, Anna?
Your father talked about it, and he's not worried about you at all. he seemed completely okay with the idea.
That's good. I did talk to Dad, and I did get that feeling. I was just within my experience that my dad is okay with many things that Mom is not necessarily okay with.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
I thought I might just make sure the Mom is happy.
That doesn't sound like something my Mom would be excited about.
Yeah, excited about it. I'm okay with her not being excited about it. You know?
Okay.
But I do want to make sure that she has said yes. So it's kind of waiting on that at the moment. I have to actually buy a camper van. I'm not going to buy one until I know I can park it in that driveway.
Okay, so wait a minute. Why do you have to park it in the driveway?
Well, I don't need to, but I think I do need a toilet, or at least some way to empty the toilet.
You should get a composting toilet.
Composting toilet, you know, like, where's all the shower water gonna go?
What shower water?
I'd have to take showers somehow.
Why?
Of course, that's Paul's response. Like, wait,
I understand that I could go that far. Like, I understand that
you're not prepared. You're not prepared to go that far.
I'm willing to take at the moment.
Okay, all right, and that's a good answer. I can accept that answer.
Thank you.
And it's important that I accept your answer.
That's important to you.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So that's what's up.
Nice.
Oh, maybe the Tabers will let me park it in their yard. I pay rent.
What are you thinking? Going
to park it in Tabers' yard?
Maybe.
Yeah. You could.
And I need a bathroom.
You could use James and Seth.
I just want to rent bathroom access.
Yeah, James and Seth live in the little barn south of the driveway.
Oh yeah.
And they've got a shower and stuff.
Maybe you can just rent it from James and Seth.
There you go.
Do you think I could rent it?
Actually, did you ever get pictures?
Of
the
bus. Yeah, and the friend, Seth's friend that wanted to sell a thing.
Seth hasn't gotten me.
Okay. Seth's got a friend who's thinking about selling his tricked out conversion van or whatever.
It's a bus. It's one of the smaller buses.
It's a short bus.
It's got cabinets and a Murphy bed, and he wants like $800 for it.
Maybe I would be interested in buying that.
Okay, he's not selling it just yet. He kind of wants to sell it in a couple months. He's going to get either a house or apartment with his girlfriend, and then he's going to get...
His concubine?
Yes.
You're saying that he got a girlfriend whilst living in a short bus?
Yes.
Hey, short bus, you know?
Girls just love to take... They like to take care of things.
Yes, but he was...
They want to take care of you because you're living on the bus. You got to sell that angle.
I see.
Kevin's like, I missed out. I've been living in a bus.
You missed out on the short bus angle.
No,
short bus angle. I'm pretty real.
Pretty sure I had the short bus experience.
Like, oh, Kevin. Oh, let me take care of him. Anna, do you want to enlighten us on women's attraction to men they need to nurture? Is that like a love-hate thing?
Women like nurturing thing?
Yeah, but it's like, but then also they seem to be attracted to men who can like provide for them, and those seem to be in competition. It's like, can you really nurture someone who also is providing for you? You know what I mean?
Well, yes, because Paul needs his shoulder to cry on, and apparently he's only comfortable crying with me, so I nurture Paul's emotional.
So if you can show a woman your soft, tender side, and also then provide for her, then you can have both. You can be a baby, and...
It's, they like to feel needed, though. Like, it's the nurturing, and they like to feel needed. Both.
Is that why you're feeling unneeded? Because I haven't cried on your shoulder recently?
No! It has nothing to do with that. No, it has everything to do with the fact that I've been completely replaced in Washington, and I don't... And I'm getting over that, and it's fine.
Okay.
No, because you and I have already discussed the disposability of each other to each other.
I think this is what I need, babe. Right here. StarTech.com HDMI to USB video capture card. So then I can use our fancy camera as a web camera. If that's something that we'd like to do.
Do we really need video, though? Like, what are you videoing?
If that's something that you'd like to do.
That's something you're into.
If that's something you're into.
I just feel like I'm not getting the full... I'm not employing the camera to the greatest extent that I could.
So, Kevin, what's good? Let's hear it.
Man, I've just had, like, the craziest 2 weeks of my life.
Nice. Let's hear about it.
All right, let's see. What happened first?
Woke up.
What?
You wake up first thing.
Oh, yeah. So, Aaliyah started having, like, really serious contractions, which, of course, is bad. when you're only 4 months pregnant. So we're trying to keep that under control. And then the baby got a fever, and it spiked super, super high, and she had a seizure. And yeah, like a super long seizure, like 8 minutes long.
Shit.
And so we're in the hospital for a while. And then right after that, she got a acting job. So baby's in a commercial now.
Wow.
And then Master Shin offered me a job, which I deliberated for a couple days about and then ended up turning down. He offered me not a lot of money, but more like twice as much money as he's ever paid me before. It's more money than I'm making now. And it would, you know, there's all the perks and all the kinds of things like, you know, working with Ryan and just being in that environment, which I enjoy.
Yeah.
But
he wasn't too fair to you before.
He wasn't fair to me before, but there were, it was a lot of good and bad. Like, it was like, okay, if I want to open my own Taekwondo studio someday, I know this guy can do that for me. He's done it routinely for a number of other people. And that was one something we talked about too, like, hey, I want you to work for me. I'll pay you this. And, you know, I'll help you open a studio like you want. I was like, okay, I know he can do that. I've seen him do that for like 8 other people over the years. You know, I know what that's reliable. It's definitely something that I want. And then on the other hand, I'm working for Coach Patty and I'm doing this Ninja Zone thing, but I'm thinking to myself like, okay, how long term is this? Like, how serious is she about this program? Is this just like a program for her to like compensate her other programs as far as money? You know, how important am I in this? And if I do have to start over on my own business, am I going to be starting from scratch now without Masterson's blessing? So there's like a ton of stuff I was just going back and forth about.
Mm.
And I talked with Dad and I know a bunch of other people, and they're like, yeah, it's kind of a split decision. Like, there's some pretty good pros and cons on either side of this. So choose whichever one you think is best and go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was about to take Masterson's offer, and I talked to Patty just to, you know, get her advice first before I officially took it. But I was definitely leaning that direction. And I wanted to let her know, I was like, hey, this is what I want. These are my goals. Master Shin can really offer that to me. He's offering me a lot more money, you know, in the short run. And I at least have to consider that for my family, you know?
Sure.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And at first she was kind of upset. She was like, you know, like, wow, that you gave me your word that you were going to be here. And does that mean anything to you? I was like, of course it means something to me, but like, I have to make a decision.
That's why I'm talking to you, right?
I have to make a decision about the long-term happiness of my family. So let's not get too wound up here. Anyway, so she calmed down and I, you know, was able to more accurately explain my thought process. I'm like, I'm not just chasing the money. I'm trying to make a decision, you know, for the future here. And so she came out, I was going out to the car and she chased me out to the parking lot. She goes, okay, well, let me do this. Let me offer you the salary position that you're working towards, because I'm not salaried yet.
Yeah.
She's like, let me offer you the salary position that you're working towards immediately. And she goes, you know, in 5 years or whatever, when you're ready to branch off and start your own business, I'll finance it.
Awesome.
I was like, well, that. She's like, it doesn't get better than that. I was like, well, you're right. It doesn't get better than that. That's pretty much both of the things I'm looking for. I can keep my conscience clear as far as keeping my word, you know, working for you. And her salary position is more than what Master Shin offered, you know.
Awesome.
But I was just thinking to myself, like, how long is this going to take to get? Whatever. Anyway, we wound up with more money, a more reliable commitment from a more trusted source. And I don't.
Well, that's really awesome, Kevin. It's awesome that, you know, Coach Patty thought you were worth that much, and that you have people who believe in you. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
kind
great.
Of the first time I've had more than too many job offers.
Yeah. Nice problem to have.
Well, yeah.
And really, the whole thing, like the whole situation that you described, it all kind of worked together, right? Like, you wouldn't have said. You wouldn't have been seriously considering Master Shin's offer if you hadn't had like all this turmoil with healthcare and children and stuff. You could have been like, well, we're doing fine now. I don't need to consider this. But instead, you're like, well, this is really important, right? Like, I need some stability. I need to be able to provide for my family. There are emergencies that come up.
Within 3 days, I accrued, you know, $4,000 of medical bills.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, so that was, 2 days ago. And so I'm supposed to sit down and sign papers with the CFO, who is a lot more stingy with the money than Patty is. Patty has the final say on stuff, ultimately, because she owns the controlling interest, but the CFO is obviously still an incredibly trusted source, and why wouldn't you trust your CFO?
Right. And the CFO is always looking at the numbers.
Right, exactly. And so he is much more tight with the money, so I don't know how much of this conversation she has had with Rolf before she offered me this job. Offered me, like, hey, I'll pay your salary right away. So, and then we had a meeting scheduled, and then she had a whole bunch of medical issues with her parents. Both of her parents are aging and in very critical health. Mm. And so she's been totally unavailable. So I'm just, like, sitting there kind of thinking, like, I'm not going to go talk to the CFO by myself. You know, like, I don't even know if he knows what's happening. You know, like, just walk in and be like, hey, so you guys are paying me a lot more money now, right? You know?
Sure.
Anyway, so
I just ask him if Patty talked to him. Like, hey, I talked to Patty about some changes in our employment agreement. I don't know if you know about that. And if he does, you can talk about it. If he doesn't, be like, okay, well, I'll
give her a call, see if you can get a quick update, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a little weird. It was the same thing at Electro Impact, where Peter Z was the owner, and like, he owned by far controlling interest of the company, but John Hartman was the guy who held the purse strings, and he was the one who brought all the work in, and you know, like, and Peter completely deferred to him on matters of money,
right?
But at the same time,
right,
like, Hartman completely deferred to Peter on matters of employment. Like, he's, you know, we're gonna pay this guy this much, all right, you say so, you know, like, that's your thing, right? So
right. Well, I mean, originally when I had talked with Rolf and asked for, you know, the particular income amount, he was like, well, I can't afford to pay you that. Like, I was like, okay, well, what needs to happen for you to be able to pay me that, you know, because that's what I'm willing to work for. And he's like, all right, so this, you know, you need 200 students and then I can afford to pay you this amount. And of course, that's what the program was like, you know, 75 people, you know, and he's like, well, you need 200. Well, I've only been there for like 2 months and we're like past 100.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So Patty's like, I can extrapolate this. This looks good. We can get there.
Right. Like, we're gonna hit this 200 mark in the next, you know, 3 months.
Right. And if things suddenly start slowing down or going bad, then I'm sure you'll have another conversation.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Right. Well, interesting.
Anyway, so I'm hoping to resolve that completely in the next couple of days. But
sweet.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sorry to hear about the health issues.
So did they find out
all right now?
She's fine. She's back to normal. I mean,
did they find out what it was? Was it like an infection?
They're like, yeah, you know, some babies just react. You know, I mean, it was a really high fever. It spiked very, very high.
Mm.
So you know, they're like, and it was like over a nap. Like, she like woke up from a nap. Like, she had had a fever. We knew that she was sick, but like, she woke up from a nap, and her fever had just gone through the roof.
Yeah,
right.
Well, that can be real scary. Kids tend to deal with high temperatures okay, though.
Wait, this was like 105.
Yeah, I mean, even that for a kid is not obviously anything to be happy about, but it's not like an adult with 105 fever is like pretty messed up. A kid with 105 is
certainly
worrying,
sick.
But it's not like they can recover from that.
But yeah, did they find out what it was? Was it like, was it just she had a flu or something? And
no, they did blood tests and a urine test and stuff to try and figure out what's going on. But they think it was just she was sick and had a fever and it just spiked.
Sure, her body's like, you know? Well, let's just try raising our temperature some more. This seems to be working.
We're gonna cook the bacteria. Well done.
Yeah,
it works actually surprisingly well.
Hmm. And Aaliyah, is she still, she's on bed rest or something?
She's taking it easy, but cramps, the contractions have stopped, so.
Yeah.
Trying to make sure that the baby gets cooked well done. That's what we want, the baby to get cooked well done, not the...
That's right. Anna's shaking her head and rolling her eyes. It's the wrong euphemism.
All right. Well, I think I need to go to sleep, because I gotta go to work.
Don't you work from home?
When I'm in Eugene, I work. From work.
But I'm not in Eugene. I work from home. All
right.
Yeah, that's how it be.
Sounds like you should not be in Eugene.
I know, right? Might gotta find a toilet. That's the key.
Public parks in Camarillo have surprisingly good restrooms.
Maybe I'll live at the Tabers. I guess I have to ask them. It's probably shouldn't just show up.
What?
You need an agent to...
An agent. I need a Tabor-connected agent to ask.
What about that? What about that
toilets?
Jay doesn't mind if you borrow it. I already asked you. And Seth doesn't have any... Seth probably wouldn't.
So is it just up to them if I use their toilet? I not need to ask anyone else? I don't know what Tabor rules are.
Well, my parents let the Wilkinsons live on the property for 6 months. And Josh lived under the house.
They talked to them though first.
What? They did, but barely anything. Like... It wasn't like kind of like, oh, you need somewhere to stay? And my parents were like, sure, just come over. Oh my goodness. And then they didn't ask for anything else. It was kind of annoying. I was more annoyed and my mom was just so nonchalant about everything. It was like, Mom.
So should I not take advantage of this to stay?
If you're just in the barn, they're not going to care.
I'm just in the barn?
Yeah.
If I park a van there, it's okay?
I think so. It depends on where it is. But yeah, there's still space. Okay. Oh, you know what? You could talk to James, and maybe we could put the van up on that spot that we just made. But you could park it on the hill.
They built a berm next to the fence.
Up on the hill. You could park
what about
it
the
there.
Back room at Mom and Dad's house?
Yeah, see, that's my first plan. But Mom didn't seem excited about it, and since she's been with Grandma, I didn't want to follow.
Oh, that's the one she talked to me about. I was like, hey, I heard Ben was coming. She's like, yeah, I think he's going to stay in the back room. I was like,
well,
okay.
I don't want to stay in the back room because it sucks there.
That's true.
What I want to do is have a camper van, live in the camper van, because then it'll be private, and then I'll have my own space. And then just use the bathroom.
If you're serious about wanting to stay on the property, I'll talk to my mom tomorrow, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'm serious about it.
Okay.
I kind of just need a toilet. That's what I'm looking for.
And a shower, apparently.
And a shower.
Does it have to be warm?
No.
Okay, because Jay has a shower in the barn, but there's no water heater.
That's fine.
Okay.
I'm just growing more chest hair.
And you can always buy an inline water heater for like $200.
Yeah, well, thanks, Anna.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's kind of, if I can get blessing that's like, yes, I can use someone's bathroom, then I think I'm going to go ahead and buy a camper van, and then I may show up. Because I think I'm not really ready to sign a lease in California, and it's way too expensive. My thought is like, hey, I'll just come down, we'll be there for a while, and then maybe I'll go visit Grandpa, who knows, just do whatever, become a hobo. So I'm following my dreams slowly to become a hobo.
That's right.
That's true.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
Baby hobo steps.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Good to talk to you. Good to hear from you, Kevin.
Yeah.
That all your ladies continue to be well.
Thanks.
And you have a boy on the way?
Yeah.
So there you go. Ladies and gentlemen.
No, but is the boy really a boy if it's still in the mother?
It's the happiest boy.
It's the happiest. It is the happiest you'll be for quite some time. That's for sure. All right. Take care.
Good night. So how are you liking work?
It's kind of been mixed.
Yeah.
It's some days it's real slow and it's like, why am I here? I don't know why they need me. And other days it's like super busy and it's like, what? Why is this so badly managed? Why can't we, like, all this could have been done beforehand.
Why am I the only one here?
Yeah. Why am I the only one who seems to be doing any work? But then there are good days where, like, something needs to get done, and get it done, and done well, and it's all clear what we're doing, and it's fun. Or other days where it's good where, like, I need to go on a job visit, and so I sit in the car and drive with Andy for an hour and a half and talk about whatever, and then we get there and walk around and take some pictures and point at things and say, what's that? And then we drive for an hour and a half back and talk with Andy for about whatever and get paid the whole time, and that's sweet. So, yeah.
There you go.
Good and bad.
Yeah, well, sounds about right. Sounds like the curse of man there.
Yeah, that's right.
Sweat of your brow there.
Sweat of your brow, you'll eat bread till you die and return to dust.
For dust you were, and dust you shall return.
That's right. I kind of wonder how much of our scripture knowledge is due to diligence and how much is due to Hanna-Barbera's animated adventures.
Hanna-Barbera's adventures is and like some Awanas. I'm gonna give a little bit of credit where credit is due, but mostly Hanna-Barbera.
They did good work. Barney keeps falling off of things.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't experience pain the same way that normal humans experience pain. Or he'll, like, just run into stuff. He'll be, like, running along, and he'll run right into the table leg. And he'll just kind of be like, ah, that's not fun. But it doesn't seem to affect his future actions. Like, he'll just do it again 5 minutes later.
Maybe he's run into one too many table legs.
You gotta stop it before it gets out of hand.
Yeah.
It's time to go to bed.
Time to go to bed?
Yeah, I know. What nonsense is this?
But it's only 11.
Yeah. Kids went down at 7:30? 8?
8:15? Oh, man. Crazy talk.
You're gonna be up early.
Yeah.
You gotta get to bed. Beat him out of bed.
Oh, I don't beat Carolyn out of bed, but...
No? She gets up and wakes you up?
She can't get out of her crib yet, so...
Ah, yeah. That's kind of a mixed blessing. Like, on the one hand, you know exactly where they are. But on the other hand, you have to get them out of bed. And, I don't know. We've slowly, over the years, moved to just, like, having them all sleep on the floor on little mattresses. And then if they wake up, they can just get up, you know, and keep sleeping.
There you go. Good idea.
But then they can also get up in the middle of the night and, like, bug you, so.
Right.
Anyway, one way or another. Have a good night.
Night.